Welcome to Fuel, an AFC podcast for propelling your leadership journey. I'm Joe Mahalik, the Propel Leadership Development Program Manager. Propel strives to develop leaders who write, speak, and behave consistently with a heart of service. Each month, Fuel gives you up close and personal access to NAFC thought leaders who have been there, done that, and are ready to tell their stories, ready to invest in you. So whether you're interested in learning what leading's all about, or you've been a leader for years, we're all on an ongoing professional journey, which requires Fuel.
In this episode, Dr. Heather Hayden shares how she learned on her journey the difference between communicating, overly communicating, and communicating well.
I'm Heather Hayden. I am the Deputy Executive Director for Digital Transformation here at the Warfare Center headquarters at the Navy Yard. And so what I do here in this particular position, as I see it, is really twofold. The current org structure up here at the Navy Yard in the headquarters, we have three Deputy Executive Directors that report directly to Dr. Martin Irvin, who is the executive director for the Warfare Centers. He has an undersea deputy executive director. He has a surface deputy executive director. And then right there, smack dab in the middle, is me, who's the director for the deputy executive director for digital transformation. Now, one part of my job includes having oversight of all of the business operations, if you will, whereas the other executive directors are more technical focused. I'm a little bit more business focused. You know, being able to digitally transform a lot of the ways that we currently do business is something that I'm leading the charge for here at headquarters. And so that's how I see what I do here at the Navy Yard. I'm dual hatted. I love what I do. I've been in the position since February. It is a very, very big change for me from what I came from. I started at Indian Head with the Navy. I started at NSWC Indian Head. So I am very, very intimate with how the warfare centers operate, our challenges, our successes, some of our challenges with communications and, you know, understanding, you know, headquarters, where headquarters head is at, and how sometimes we really need to work to make sure we have excellent communication to, if we're going to implement policies and find a balance, you know, how do we make sure that it works for the divisions? Because we have 10 divisions and they all do an amazing, different set and complex everything, right? I really have to tell you, I feel like that all of the experience that I gained in the technical world only helps me here in the business operations world, because you cannot have success in one without the other. Okay. And, you know, that was another thing that we really struggled with. I struggled with in the department. You know, for instance, everybody owns acquisition, everybody. Okay. And for a research development test and evaluation community of highly skilled technical people, if they're not able to embrace what it takes to get something on order, or to let a contract, or, you know, to make sure that your facilities are up and working, that your HVAC works, you know, that if you need to do these critical, you know, you need to take these critical readings and you need your humidity to be working, you know, it's that complement of those two lanes that are a bigger picture thinking that you just need both to be successful. And I, sitting in this position, am able to also help, you know, a lot of our business folks don't have that connection with the technical world. And so being able to bridge that gap, you know, there's gaps in translation, right? What are these, you know, nerdy PhD scientists and engineers need this crazy chemical for? Well, let me tell you, this is what it's for. We're putting it in a torpedo, and that torpedo with that ingredient, that torpedo is going to blow up a bad guy. You know, it's that type of gross oversimplification, but, you know, it's being able to get those two very important key communities together and get them talking. Because, like I said, in this warfighting preparedness, or this warfighting readiness posture that we're moving to, you know, we are not going to be able to function without one another in step. So
how did you balance earning that doctorate's degree in mechanical engineering, which you didn't introduce yourself as Dr. Hayden, but I know you to be that. So I will do that for you. And then, you know, you were working full time, I'm assuming, and, you know, in a highly technical field. And maybe, just maybe, you had a personal life. How did you balance all that? And how does that fit in your current role? Like I said, so you're coming from that really highly technical thing, and now you're in this really a business operations role. So
my husband was on the board of directors for a gentleman who worked at an SWC Indian Head and said, hey, Indian Head is looking for, you know, some energetic youngsters, and, you know, we're going through a huge hiring phase right now, and, you know, why don't you, you know, have your wife send me her resume, and let's see if maybe she'd be interested in coming to work at Indian Head. And the rest is history. Like I said, I started down there in 2002, and I was so fortunate. The Navy has been so good to me. And God blessed me with the ability to be able to manage going to school in the evenings and being able to execute work that directly linked to my job in the branch that I was at in Indian Head on gun propellants and the R&D of new ingredients to put in large caliber 5-inch 54 gun propellants.
And R&D then, being research and development, just to
yes, yeah. Research and development. That's right. And then to be able to finally graduate with my PhD in combustion in 2009 from George Washington University. So my journey has been a long one, and I will be very honest with you. It was difficult. I don't want to paint this, you know, super happy, gorgeous picture. It was tough. I was also raising four stepchildren, which added its whole different set of challenges. But it was something where, to be honest with you, after a couple of good thorough discussions with my husband and him making sure that he understood that he was important too, I really needed to sit down and think and strategize about how I was going to approach this and being able to really figure out how to truly balance your home life, your personal life, and then also, you know, your career. And I was also a little bit different because God spoke to me a long time ago, and it was just something that was never in the cards for me to have my own biological children. But, you know, like I said, my stepchildren are my children. And so, you know, I feel like even though I wasn't blessed with biological children, I was blessed with my stepchildren, and they tested me as much as a regular biological child would test you. So I feel like I got my credentials there, and I got my card, my parent card. But it was one of those type of things, quite honestly, where setting a schedule every single week, you know, literally on Sundays, I would have to do that because, like I said, I was going to school in the evenings. Now, this is when, you know, I was down in Indian Head. So I had to get myself from Indian Head to the University of Maryland, okay, for these courses in the evening. So I did spend a lot of time on the Beltway getting there. But I'm a huge advocate for in-person courses. I'm going to be honest with you there. I might upset some people. I'm not really fond of these, you know, online courses. And again, I'm an old lady, I'm old school, but I really believe in the exchanges with your fellow and that commiseration, if you will, with your fellow, you know, engineers sitting in there trying to understand all of these, you know, laws and how to apply all these, you know, techniques and those interactions with your professors. So, but it was very important for me to be schedule driven. I got very intimate with Microsoft Project. And I think the thing that was the most important to me is I set deadlines. I had to set deadlines. I had to set deadlines for when I was going to start my dissertation. I was going to set deadlines for, you know, how often I was going to be going out. I did a lot of my experiments were done in California. A lot of people don't know this, but the equipment that I used was a one-of-a-kind instrumentation it was a combination of it was called the simultaneous thermogravimetric modular beam mass spectrometer, STM-BMS. And it was an instrument that was developed by Dr. Richard Behrens out at Sandia Livermore Laboratories. And so I was going out there also and spending weeks at a time to try and do a bunch of experiments. And then I would come back here and I would analyze the data. And so being organized was a very, very big part of that. And like I said, setting the deadlines was important. I missed the deadlines on many, many occasions, but it really was getting it in front of me, getting that schedule in front of me, laying out expectations, goals, objectives. And that's really one area, to be honest with you, that my PhD taught me that I feel helps me in being a leader, moving from a GS-15 to becoming an SSTM and maybe an SES one day, is being able to clearly articulate and document roles, responsibilities, and expectations, and setting deadlines, right? People inherently want deadlines. I'm sorry, they say they don't, but they do. But that's a really, really big part of it. And then having that in front of you and knowing, you know, that you've got to have X done on X amount of date is really a motivator. And it's really something that I feel that's important. That was one of the bigger challenges when I got into the SSTM role as the research development test and evaluation department head at Indian Head.
So the primary intention of this podcast is focusing on you as a leader and telling your story and investing in others. And so when I read in your bio that you had basically created an organization that did not used to exist within the echelon two of Naval Sea Systems, NAVSEA, that was impressive to me, but that's because I kind of have an understanding of how enormous of an organization we are, and to create something brand new in a organization that maybe tends to be a little bit more rigid. But maybe that's not what you expect.
My biggest challenge, to be honest with you, was I just didn't have enough resources to, you know, to fortify the organization. So long story short, like I said, I had to get creative. I was, you know, borrowing bodies from some of the other different directorates. I was reaching down to some of my other contacts at the warfare centers, and we were doing some rotations and doing some details, leveraging Dahlgren. Like I said, Mr. Sisson was helping me do this and, you know, leveraging some of the expertise at NOSA. Finally convinced Ms. Fan. I had to build a business case. Went in front of Ms. Fan, Vice Admiral Galinas, and laid out the situation and basically stated, for us to execute at the level that you want this new regulatory and compliance organization to function at, you're going to have these individuals in place. So I was able to secure not only, you know, going and getting an executive level billet, but I was able to get a handful of additional billets that we needed in order to build. And So it was really stressful, but at the end of the day, we as SSTMs, as leaders, you have to motivate your workforce. There was a lot of negativity that was any kind of realignment is going to naturally conjure up negative feelings, right? So we had to work around that. I brought a tone of positivity, communication. The overall realignment was not well communicated to the workforce, so I had monthly all hands. They so embraced the communications, and I had multiple people coming up thanking me and just simply saying, thank you for giving us a heads up on what's going on. We just didn't know. You know, I didn't even know where I was going to be sitting. I didn't even know if I was still going to be a part of the NAVSEA, you know, ESH2 organization. And so communication is a very, very big part of overcoming these hurdles. If I have found if you're transparent, it really brings a group together. And if you're comfortable saying, look, I'm really challenged with this too, you know, but I need your help. This is where I'm at. This is where I want to go. And I need your help to get me there. So for me, you know, if someone were to say to me, you know, what is an attribute that you hang your hat on at the end of the day, that you feel like really is the key to your success, it's the ability to bring people together and communicate well. Not overly communicate well. And I wasn't always good at that. So that was something that I had to learn, was the difference between being an over communicator and being able to communicate well. So, that was about one of the best experiences of my life. It was a detail. My responsibilities at Indian Head, we had some things happen that called me back to Indian Head pretty rapidly. So I had to go back to Indian Head, which was good, got things settled there. And then, of course, you know, I really enjoyed my time here at the Navy Yard. And so when this position presented itself, I really wanted to apply and keep my fingers and hope that I could make my way back up to the Navy Yard. So I was very fortunate to get this position. So that's kind of a very long-winded, you know, spiel about how I even got, you know, how I caught the NAVC bug. So
caught the NAVC bug. I like that. Don't have a ton of time left, but I want to hit one point and then I'll get to my last question. Could you give me maybe 2 minutes on the value of rotations? Because you said you were on a rotation and you couldn't have succeeded at establishing that new safety regulatory compliance directorate without having people who were on rotation. So talk about, if you don't mind, the value of rotations and, you know, just give us your perspective on it.
Sure, absolutely. So as a leader, I think everybody constantly tells us you need to get out of your comfort zone, right? That only makes you grow. Go and do something that you don't know how to do, okay? And that's very, very important. All of the mentors in my life have always said you need to go and always try and seize any opportunity to do something different. And so, you know, it's natural that we're going to get comfortable in our normal spaces. And that's where I was at Indian Head. I was very comfortable being the RDT&E department head. I found myself complaining and I wasn't helping anybody. And I felt like I was in a little bit of a rut. And that doesn't help anybody. That's not good. And so anyway, the value of rotations is it gets you out of your normal comfort zone. You get to experience what other people, you know, you get to experience new organizations and see other people's challenges and see where they do things really, really well. And then sometimes you can take that back to your organization with new ideas and a fresh set of eyes. And the other thing, the value added that I see in leveraging rotations is that it diversifies the skill set of the individuals needed. We as a Navy are really, really challenged to find niche skill sets, and specifically at the warfare centers, right? So we have no other choice but to open our aperture and to see what other skill sets are out there and what other skill sets individuals can bring to the table. It might not be a perfect match, but you know, they may be able to bring something different that you never thought of. You know, in trying to pursue these solutions to these really hard problems. And so I just find, you know, when you're sitting around the table and, you know, I have found on more than one occasion, you ask the one person that you know what their background in is really not a background that you think is going to be able to provide a huge contribution to this particular conversation. And you go around the room and say, hey, what are your thoughts? And they have a brilliant idea that I never even thought of, right? You know, and so just being able to have that different view and having a wide array of perspectives and skill sets and just, you know, people that have had to solve different problems, it really, really is important because we've got, and I'm guilty of it. I constantly put on my blinders and I think, you know, in my mindset a lot of times, and we've got to get out of that. And as a leader, that's really important. And coming into this position, like you and I discussed, me coming from such a technical world and a technical box and coming into this business side, I've really had to open my aperture and say, well, wow, I never really thought of it like that. And so that's really important. And those types of, that's going to get you to a solution quicker than anything else, is being able to see other perspectives and be open to other solutions that you yourself, you know, or your smaller team didn't necessarily think about. So those rotations are critical and valuable. And like I said, it just provides you with a whole set of a different perspective that you wouldn't, might not otherwise have, you know, sitting at your normal place.
So. Yeah. And I think that the fact that you pointed out that it's a natural progression, the longer you're in a role, that you become a little bit more myopic, if you will, a little bit hyper-focused. And it's to no fault of your own, but just the nature of the work. And so going on a rotation just pulls you naturally out of that and allows that perspective. So thank you for sharing that. I wish we had more time because I want to dig in on other things. But that said, what are some mentors that you've had, or rather, what have you admired about leaders or mentors that you've interacted with over your career? What was the impact that they had on your leadership style?
Good question. So like I sort of alluded to before, as you can, I'm pretty sure I come across as pretty energetic, you know, and so I think early in my career, like I mentioned, the difference between communicating, overly communicating, and communicating well, I think there's a difference there. I have found from my mentors, one of the beauties of their characteristics and traits that they bring is to be able to listen from the very beginning and listen entirely before speaking. Okay. And interjecting. Early in my career, I would get excited and I'd hear, you know, someone would come in my office and, you know, they'd sit down and I have a problem or I have an idea and, you know, I'd get excited and I'd want to talk. You know, and sometimes you have to give people the grace to let them get it all out, right? And I found that mostly, you know, when it's more of a problem, that this trait works the best. They're able to have their peace. They're able to say what they need to say. I'm able to hear, you know, what their side of the story is. And so it's listening intently, being engaged, you know, but listening entirely and allowing the individual that space to speak. Not rushing to judgment also, with my energy and me feeling like I need to say something. I caught myself a couple of times, maybe, you know, passing judgment, before I knew all of the facts, right. And let them get to their summary of what kind of happened. So, not judging, very, very big part, careful with the assumption. You know, with us, you know, I have found that with my experience, one thing that I tend to do, and I think this is also very natural at my age, I've seen people do a lot of things. I've seen things happen. And I naturally, you know, sometimes I make assumption, I'm like, well, I've seen this picture before, and I bet you this is what's going to happen. But, you know, you really need to, like I said, sit in your space, absorb all of the data, you know, observe the individual's perspective, put the assumptions aside, do a full assessment, you know, get more than just one individual's takes on it before you start, you know, providing your overall, you know, full on thoughts as to how to pivot or how to approach it. I just think in the beginning, I was, you know, my energy got the best of me and I made some assumptions and made some decisions and put myself out there that, you know, got my hand slapped a little bit or whatever the case may be before I actually knew the full story. And so any of my mentors, Ms. Karen Burrows actually is my mentor. She used to be the executive director at NOSA. And that is really one thing that I learned from her is when she walked into a room, and as us as senior leaders, for the most part, people always come to us with negativity, right? So you can get drugged down in that. But the way that she always chose to approach it is, you know, to let the person have their space and say their piece and just say, well, you know, so my knee-jerk reaction would be to say this. But I'm going to do some fact finding. I have some questions, you know, if you can't answer these questions, you know, can you point me to somebody that you would recommend that could help me, you know, get the answers. And then let's get back together and plan together on how we can not only meet your needs or come to a solution that works for you, but also, you know, getting some information on if there's an opposing party or whatever. And so it's just really that ability to, you know, understand your perspective, but see other people's perspective. And again, that comes in with comms, that comes in with clear communications and being able to understand. Everybody comes to the table with a different perspective, and being able to appreciate everybody's perspective is going to be a really big part of getting to that solution. So, you know, like I said, what I learned was not to quickly jump to a conclusion or jump to any assumptions or jump to judgment. Be able to get all of the facts, understand that there's more than one side, and be able to come together as a team and articulate, you know, kind of what the solution is. So does that make sense?
It does. I kind of jotted down, as problem solvers, we want to get to that solution.
Yes.
And there's so much value from what I heard you just say. There's so much value in letting things play out. And you oftentimes will get solutions from unexpected sources when you do that. That's also what I took from what you said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and everybody comes to the table, and 9 times out of 10, what I've learned, honestly, when the individual that approached me, there's more to the story. There's always more to the story. And so take the time, give yourself the grace to go find out what the other side of that story is. Don't jump to conclusions and assume that, you know, that this one perspective that you've gotten is the end all. There, it's a bigger picture. There's always going to be a bigger picture.
Always. Well, if you don't have more than 2 minutes left on your calendar, then you've got those 2 minutes to kind of give your last pieces of thoughts on why leadership is important to you personally, and why you think people should just keep on working on that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and you have to really make that decision as to what leadership looks like to you. And what's important to you. At the end of the day, any decision that I make, I just want to be able to make sure that, you know, I am able to be at peace with it. Faith is a very, very big part of my everyday, you know, journey. And I try to put the Lord Jesus Christ first and foremost in everything that I do. I'm not always super, super successful at it, but I try. I keep and you know, I try to be the best person that I can be. And at the end of the day, I want to make sure that my decisions are made with integrity, and I'm able to go to sleep at night with it. And I'm good with those decisions. Leadership is very gratifying. It is for me something that, because I love to work with people, I'm constantly looking at how I can make other people's life better. And leadership, that's really kind of the foundation. It's really not for money. It really shouldn't be for recognition. It should be at the end of the day for what you can do for your fellow colleagues. And in these leadership positions, is very, very important. It's not going to be about you. It's going to be about what you can do for those folks around you. And I get a lot of joy in being able, even if it's just as simple as, you know, making sure that, you know, if my staff comes in, they have everything that they need to do their job at the end of the day, whether it be pens, pads, their computer, whatever, just being able to be that servant to folks and help them. And so that mindset is really, really important. You're going to need to put your ego aside. That's also very important. I've learned that being a female in a mostly dominated male organization, and being able to know in your heart that, you know, if you're comfortable with who you are, you can walk into any room and you can really, you know, hold your own, and you can, you know, leverage your background and your expertise and be comfortable. Don't try to be somebody that you're not. that always shines immediately through. And so I just encourage everybody that's listening, if you're anticipating, you know, trying to become an SES or an SSTM, really take a step back and think about what your goals and objectives are and why do you want to be a leader, and write them down and think about what's important to you and what makes you happy. And at the end of the day, it's all about the greater good and serving your fellow colleagues. So that's where I'm at on it.
Thank you for joining this episode of the Fuel Podcast, brought to you by NAVSEA's Propel Leadership Development Program. For more information about Propel, visit the Propel Wiki page. Thanks for adding fuel to propel your journey.